Francisco. What does that mean? He chuckled. Draw your own conclusions. Dagny. His face was serious. Why did you think of Halley writing a fifth concerto? Why not a new symphony or opera? Why specifically a concerto? Why does that disturb you? It doesn't, he added softly. I still love his music, Dagny. Then he spoke lightly again. But it belonged to another age. Our age provides a different kind of entertainment. He rolled over on his back and lay with his hands crossed under his head, looking up as if he were watching the scenes of a movie farce unrolling on the ceiling. Dagny, didn't you enjoy the spectacle of the behavior of the people's state of Mexico in regard to the San Sebastian mines? Did you read their government speeches and the editorials in their newspapers? They're saying that I am an unscrupulous cheat who has defrauded them. They expected to have a successful mining concern to seize. I had no right to disappoint them like that. Did you read about the scabby little bureaucrat who wanted them to sue me? He laughed, lying flat on his back. His arms were thrown wide on the carpet, forming a cross with his body. He seemed disarmed, relaxed, and young. It was worth whatever it's cost me. I could afford the price of that show. If I'd staged it intentionally, I would have beaten the record of the Emperor Nero. What's burning a city compared to tearing the lid off hell and letting men see it? He raised himself, picked up a few marbles, and sat shaking them absently in his hand. They clicked with the soft, clear sound of good stone. She realized suddenly that playing with those marbles was not a deliberate affectation on his part. It was restlessness. He could not remain inactive for long. The government of the People's State of Mexico has issued a proclamation, he said, asking the people to be patient and put up with hardships just a little longer. It seems that the copper fortune of the San Sebastian mines was part of the plans of the Central Planning Council. It was to raise everybody's standard of living and provide a roast of pork every Sunday for every man, woman, child, and abortion in the People's State of Mexico. Now the planners are asking their people not to blame the government, but to blame the depravity of the rich, because I turned out to be an irresponsible playboy instead of the greedy capitalist I was expected to be. How were they to know, they're asking, that I would let them down? Well, true enough. How were they to know it? She noticed the way he fingered the marbles in his hand. He was not conscious of it. He was looking off into some grim distance. But she felt certain that the action was a relief to him, perhaps as a contrast. His fingers were moving slowly, feeling the texture of the stones with sensual enjoyment. Instead of finding it crude, she found it strangely attractive. As if, she thought suddenly, as if sensuality were not physical at all, but came from a fine discrimination of the spirit. And that's not all they didn't know, he said. They're in for some more knowledge. There's that housing settlement for the workers of San Sebastian. It cost $8 million. Steel frame houses with plumbing, electricity, and refrigeration. Also a school, a church, a hospital, and a movie theater. A settlement built for people who had lived in hovels made of driftwood and stray tin cans. My reward for building it was to be the privilege of escaping with my skin, a special concession due to the accident of my not being a native of the People's State of Mexico. That worker settlement was also part of their plans, a model example of progressive state housing. Well, those steel frame houses are mainly cardboard, with a coating of good imitation shellac. They won't stand another year. The plumbing pipes, as well as most of our mining equipment, were purchased from dealers whose main source of supply are the city dumps of Buenos Aires and Rio de Janeiro. I'd give those pipes another 5 months, and the electric system about 6. The wonderful roads we graded up 4,000 feet of rock for the People's State of Mexico will not last beyond a couple of winters. They're cheap cement without foundation, and the bracing at the bad turns is just painted clapboard. Wait for one good mountain slide. The church, I think, will stand. They'll need it. Francisco, she whispered. Did you do it on purpose? He raised his head. She was startled to see that his face had a look of infinite weariness. Whether I did it on purpose, he said, or through neglect or through stupidity, don't you understand that that doesn't make any difference? The same element was missing. She was trembling. Against all her decisions and control, she cried, "Francisco, if you see what's happening in the world, if you understand all the things you said, you can't laugh about it? You, of all men, you should fight them."
"Whom?"
"The looters, and those who make world looting possible. The Mexican planners and their kind." His smile had a dangerous edge.
"No, my dear. It's you that I have to fight."
She looked at him blankly.
"What are you trying to say?"
"I'm saying that the workers' settlement of San Sebastian cost $8 million, he answered with slow emphasis, his voice hard. "The price paid for those cardboard houses was the price that could have bought steel structures. So was the price paid for every other item. That money went to men who grow rich by such methods. Such men do not remain rich for long. The money will go into channels which will carry it, not to the most productive, but to the most corrupt. By the standards of our time, the man who has the least to offer is the man who wins. That money will vanish in projects such as the San Sebastian mines."
She asked with effort, "Is that what you're after?"
"Yes."
"Is that what you find amusing?"
"Yes."
"I am thinking of your name," she said, while another part of her mind was crying to her that reproaches were useless. "It was a tradition of your family that a Danconia always left a fortune greater than the one he received."
"Oh, yes. My ancestors had a remarkable ability for doing the right thing at the right time, and for making the right investments. Of course, investment is a relative term. It depends on what you wish to accomplish. For instance, look at San Sebastian. It cost me $15 million. But these $15 million wiped out $40 million belonging to Taggart Transcontinental, $35 million belonging to stockholders such as James Taggart and Orrin Boyle, and hundreds of millions which will be lost in secondary consequences. That's not a bad return on an investment, is it, Dagny?"
She was sitting straight.
"Do you realize what you're saying?"
"Oh, fully.
Shall I beat you to it and name the consequences you were going to reproach me for? First, I don't think that Taggart Transcontinental will recover from its loss on that preposterous San Sebastian line. You think it will, but it won't. Second, the San Sebastian helped your brother James to destroy the Phoenix Durango, which was about the only good railroad left anywhere."
"You realize all that?"
"And a great deal more."
"Do you?"
She did not know why she had to say it, except that the memory of the face with the dark, violent eyes seemed to stare at her.
"Do you know Ellis Wyatt?"
"Sure."
"Do you know what this might do to him?"
"Yes." "He's the one who's going to be wiped out next."
"Do you find that amusing?"
"Much more amusing than the ruin of the Mexican planners."
She stood up.
She had called him corrupt for years. She had feared it. She had thought about it. She had tried to forget it and never think of it again. But she had never suspected how far the corruption had gone. She was not looking at him. She did not know that she was saying it aloud, quoting his words of the past.
"Who will do greater honor, you to Nat Taggart, or I to Sebastian Danconia?"
"But didn't you realize that I named those mines in honor of my great ancestor? I think it was a tribute which he would have liked." It took her a moment to recover her eyesight. She had never known what was meant by blasphemy, or what one felt on encountering it. She knew it now. He had risen and stood courteously, smiling down at her. It was a cold smile, impersonal and unrevealing. She was trembling, but it did not matter. She did not care what he saw or guessed or laughed at.
"I came here because I wanted to know the reason for what you've done with your life," she said tonelessly, without anger.
"I have told you the reason," he answered gravely, "but you don't want to believe it."
"I kept seeing you as you were. I couldn't forget it. And that you should have become what you are, that does not belong in a rational universe."
"No. And the world as you see it around you does?
You were not the kind of man who gets broken by any kind of world."
"True."
"Then why?"
He shrugged. "Who is John Galt?"
"Oh, don't use gutter language." He glanced at her. His lips held the hint of a smile, but his eyes were still, earnest, and for an instant, disturbingly perceptive. "Why?" she repeated. He answered, as he had answered in the night in this hotel 10 years ago. "You're not ready to hear it." He did not follow her to the door. She had put her hand on the doorknob when she turned and stopped. He stood across the room looking at her. It was a glance directed at her whole person. She knew its meaning, and it held her motionless. "I still want to sleep with you," he said, "but I'm not a man who is happy enough to do it." "Not happy enough?" she repeated in complete bewilderment. He laughed. "Is it proper that that should be the first thing you'd answer?" He waited, but she remained silent. "You want it too, don't you?" She was about to answer no, but realized that the truth was worse than that. "Yes," she answered coldly. "But it doesn't matter to me that I want it." He smiled in open appreciation, acknowledging the strength she had needed to say it. But he was not smiling when he said, as she opened the door to leave, "You have a great deal of courage, Dagny. Someday you'll have enough of it." "Of what? Courage?" But he did not answer.